Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Sukha pachaya samadhiti. Which means that samadhi, the states of deep meditation, is dependent, is from the happiness condition. And at this time in our 20th rains retreat, just over 2 weeks into the 3 month retreat, it should be the time now everyone's settling into the practice here. The busyness of the first few days would have dissipated, settling into the routine where there's no physical work except for your meager duties, letting go of the past. And it's still a long way to the end of the rains retreat, so you don't even have to think about that, that's just too far away. So it's a great period of the retreat where the mind should be settling down and really getting into the development of peaceful states of mind, samadhi states, which I know that many of you have come here to develop. But sometimes that we find it difficult at this particular stage. Even though the situation is almost perfect, this rains retreat has got off to a very good start with no great crises happening here, this rains retreat. It's one of the best starts we've had for a rains retreat. But nevertheless, there comes a time when a sense of boredom can come into one's meditation, a sense of restlessness coming in, a sense of that one's expectations are not really being fully met. One has all the external situation just perfect, but still it doesn't work. And so at this time of a retreat, you start to give some skillful means to be able to develop the states of deep meditation. And the most essential of those skillful means was stated during the beginning of the talk in Pali, Sukha Pachaya Samadhi, that samadhi comes from happiness. And that's the happiness of the mind, of the six senses. It is the mental, the mind sense, that the happiness develops into samadhi. It's that happy mind, not the happy sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, but the happy mind develops samadhi. And I've seen this so often in the years I've been a teacher. Those people with happy mind states are those I can expect will get samadhi states very easily, very quickly. Those people who are pure-hearted, as you've heard me say before, who are very giving, who are very forgiving, who are non-critical, who, as they say in the world, are pure-hearted people. They're the ones who get meditation very easily. And it brings me to talk about the ways of developing happiness in the monastic life, in a retreat situation, and also the obstacles to that happiness, and why it is that sometimes that even in the best and most perfect situations, we can feel quite miserable, frustrated, angry, disappointed. But please remember that if you do feel upset, angry, disappointed, frustrated, please don't pass the fault of that onto somebody else. Do not blame the monastery, the routine, myself, or anybody else. Remember that you are the owner of your karma. You create those situations, those conditions, you react to them. You're the one who's creating the misery. And if you are creating happiness in your monastic life, then congratulations, because it's not me, it's not the monastery, it's not Ajahn Chah, it's not the Buddha. You're doing that. Well done. We are the owners of our karma. However, because many of us grew up in the Western world, we always tend to blame others for our unhappiness. as if it's other people are putting the obstacles in our way, so that we cannot develop meditation, that we cannot develop the happiness, we cannot develop the freedoms of jhana, we cannot develop the Eightfold Path. It's always somebody else's fault. And that, as you know, that famous teaching of Ajahn Chah, is like having an itch on the head and scratching your bum. It's always doing the wrong thing. Recently in my talks in Nolamara and Malaysia, Singapore, Melbourne, I've always been saying the adage, never let another person control your happiness. And I keep that to myself as well. I never allow anybody, even in this monastery, to control my happiness. Because I know my happiness is my business. It's none of yours. So I decide to be happy. No matter what you say, no matter what you do, no matter what the situation is, no matter what my body does, I won't even allow my body to control my happiness. If I am sick, if I feel tired, if I've got a flu or a cold or whatever, I'm not going to allow that to stop me being happy. Because the happiness is my business. I know you can do that because the Buddha said you could. And that happiness is what leads to samadhi. So first of all, we understand that the happiness is our concern. We don't blame the monastery, the weather, our body or anything. We don't blame life, poor me. Instead, we follow the opposite of blaming and fault-finding. And the opposite of that is like contentment, gratitude. This is focusing on the positive of this monastery, of your life here, of your body, of your heart, of your mind state. It's called katanyuta. That katanyuta is very, very important. It literally means like acknowledge what's been achieved, what's been done. Acknowledging that. Acknowledging just all of the help which you've been given. Acknowledging the fact you've got a hut to stay in. Acknowledging that it's reasonably peaceful. If you don't think it's peaceful enough, just imagine or just remember, many of you have been to monasteries in other parts of the world, how noisy those monasteries are and how much more is demanded of you in other places than here in this retreat. So one is grateful for the opportunity. One is grateful for the food which is given. Even this evening I was saying, just when I was eating just a piece of chocolate, I was grateful that I had a piece of chocolate to eat this evening. Remembering that just somebody, some kind person, thought to offer some chocolate to the monks during this retreat. And they'd worked hard for this, and they'd gone to the shops to buy it, and they came all this way to offer it to the Sangha, out of joy in supporting monks who were practicing well. And that piece of chocolate, that some Anagarika had unwrapped it, cut it up, and put it up for the monks, and my Upatak had very carefully put it in a bowl for me. There's so many people I'm grateful for, so that I can have this one piece of chocolate. You may think that's silly, but the Buddha praised gratitude. And what it is focusing on the joy of what we have. Focusing on the joy of what we have actually develops the happiness, the contentment. The word contentment, santuti, sometimes the word santuti, contentment, which is, as many of you know, is part of the gradual training, something we should develop as monks. Just looking through the Pali Dictionary recently, it means a little bit more than just a bland contentment. It almost means like happiness. It does actually literally mean happiness with little. Now, santuti comes from santusita. Now, you all know what the Tusita realm is. It's the heavenly realm. I've been telling lay people that this is because there's 33 people here for this time of the range retreat, this is the heaven of the 33. We started off as the heaven of the 33. For the next week, I want to up the happiness levels and go up to the heaven of the Tusita realm, the Santusita realm, the Santuti realm. The realm of happy contentment. Happy contentment means we're happy with the robes we have, with the hut we have. But it means more than that. It means we're happy with the meditation we have, with the body we have, with the life we have. This is actually putting happiness into that, instead of focusing on the faults and what's wrong, which is so easy to do, and you've all done that. And how much time have you wasted trying to fix up the faults? And what does it do to your mind? When you start focus on the faults, you find that it saps all your energy, and the mind doesn't leap towards the mind's releases of meditation. The fault finding actually drags you down into the world. Your energy levels go down. Your inspiration fades away. Your faith can even get sort of weakened. And your whole five spiritual qualities, especially energy, just dissipate simply because of fault finding. But if you go in the opposite direction of contentment, santuti, happiness with what you have, gratitude for where you are, you'll find that the five spiritual qualities start to increase. You do have more faith, more confidence. You do have more energy. From the energy, the mindfulness becomes empowered. You're not wasting and dissipating energy. When you're happy, you're energetic. Samadhi comes from the sukha, and wisdom comes as well. It's wise to look with gratitude and with happy contentment on what's happening in this monastery, in your life, in your meditation. So when you're looking in your day, which is spent in your heart, isn't it wonderful that I have the opportunity just to be able to sit for half an hour or an hour? Even that's all the time you've got because you have other duties to do. Isn't it a great privilege to be able to sit and do the Buddha's work? You call it like watering the Bodhi tree inside of you, the simile I was saying to someone earlier. Like the Bodhi tree, the wisdom tree inside of you. Every time you meditate, you have a chance to water it. And those Bodhi trees are very, very strong, even if you don't water them all that often. Every time you water them, they grow and grow and grow. So you're doing the Buddha's work, you're doing the Buddha's job. Isn't it a wonderful opportunity to do this? And if it's your job to serve others, you're serving people who are meditating. Isn't it a wonderful opportunity to be of service to monks who are following the Eightfold Path? Which is very, very rare to find in this world, even in monasteries these days. Monks of the caliber of Bodhinyana Monastery, dedicated to the Eightfold Path, dedicated to Samadhi, dedicated to wisdom, keeping their precepts pure. It's a privilege to actually to serve. And so when you look at your service in that way, again it brings happiness. And when you have got an hour to sit meditation, isn't it wonderful I've got this hour by myself to sit? If you start off with that attitude, you find that hour becomes a very happy hour. Because it starts off with happiness, the mind leaps to that hour instead of spending all the time criticizing, fault-finding. And you find that hour is just such wonderful, blissful samadhi. Because you started from happiness, the happiness born of contentment, the happiness born of gratitude. The opposite is if we think, I've only got an hour, it's not fair. All those other guys are just doing so much. Why do I always have to do this? You've all been through those states of criticizing others, criticizing the place, criticizing even yourself. I'm hopeless. Be grateful for yourself, the fact you've come to this monastery, the fact you're here. You sacrifice so much just to get this far. And think just how wonderful the achievement is just to manage to get to a meditation cushion or stool and be able to sit. Be grateful to your body for giving that time, even if you can only sit half an hour because you're pain or you're weak. Thank you, body, for giving me this half an hour where I can just focus on my mind and let go. Because when you're grateful to your body, the body will respond by being kind to you. But very often we have not gratitude, but we have this fault-finding, you stupid body. Why are you always aching? Why are you so sick? Why are you so tired? Why are you so restless? And that fault-finding, that negativity, just adds to the problems. You don't work with the body. You're fighting it, working against it, controlling it, mostly with ill will. And that's why the body gets more and more tense, more and more sick. So instead we have gratitude towards this body, a sense of kindness and gentleness towards it. Isn't it wonderful that I could just sit for an hour, or sit for half an hour, instead of wondering, I haven't got my 10 hours in today, when am I going to manage to get 10 hours in? If you're always wondering about how to get 10 hours in, all the 9.5 hours which you've already sat, you're not grateful for at all, you throw them away. You failed. Please don't do that. Even deeper, one should be just grateful for the moment. As one develops this meditation more and more, one starts to see the tyranny of time and the stupidity of thinking in time and using that paradigm, that framework for one's life. A lot of the controlling, a lot of the fault-finding is all to do with time. If you just focus in this wonderful, beautiful present moment, it's a place of so much freedom. That's why I spend so much time emphasizing the present moment, just now, the pleasant moment, which is the same as the present moment. Because when one comes into the present moment, if one hasn't got gratitude for it, one cannot stay. If one thinks this moment's not good enough, I want another one, it's called ill will. If you think that the next moment would be much better, it's called desire, craving. It's all these things which have no gratitude, no sense of contentment, no sense of being happy with little. In Thai we used to call this Phumak Noi, someone who is content with little. By that we meant who's just content with small things, who's content with just this moment, rather than wanting it to be jhana, wanting it to be magapala, wanting it to be enlightenment, wanting it to be remember your past lives, flying through the air, whatever else you want to do. Just be content with this moment, with this body, with this mat, with this hall, with this temperature, with this monastery, with this range retreat. When you're content in this moment, you find this is the path, the Eightfold Path. This is the Third Noble Truth. You're right there, watering the Bodhi tree, and you know it's going to grow. Every time that you are discontent, you start blaming, you're throwing the water on the weeds, not on the Bodhi tree. That's why the Bodhi tree inside of you never grows. So we develop santuti, this happiness, santusita, the happiness with little. Not just bland contentment, we get into this present moment and we delight in it. We delight in our hut. We delight in our meditation cushion. And even when you're sick, you delight in your body. For just giving you this much, the fact that you can live monastic life, the fact you're a monk, the fact you can sit or walk even just for 5 minutes, thank you so much. When you don't ask for very much, you get everything you ever want, and much, much more. When you ask for a lot, you hardly get anything at all. Always used to be the tradition of the teachers. Whenever you'd ask for something, they never give it to you. When you never ask at all, you get heaps and heaps of things. Even this monastery, we never ask for anything in this monastery, never ask for donations. That's why they come. If we asked for them and had fundraising and and appeals, we'd still be struggling. It's like Ajahn Chah. Whenever someone would ask for something, he would never give it. I remember one monk once was asking him. This was a time when the monks were being dispersed to the different branch monasteries. And at that particular time, one Western monk was told to go to a monastery called Suan Gloi, which was not at that time a very popular place to go to. It was almost like the Siberia of the branch monasteries. But he was resolved to go because Ajahn Chah wanted to go there. So he went to see Ajahn Chah, when am I going to go? And Ajahn Chah said, oh, well, maybe I'll let you know later on. And he changed the subject. So he wasn't told. So he went there the next day because he needed to make plans. So Ajahn Chah, when am I going to go? And Ajahn Chah changed the subject again. I was there at the time when he was telling me, I don't know when Ajahn Chah is going to let me go. About 6 or 7 nights in a row, he'd go to the Ajahn Chah's hut and keep asking. And after a while, he gave up. And as soon as he gave up, the next day, Ajahn Chah said, you can go on this day. Ajahn Chah was playing, teaching. The more you ask, the less likely it was that he would give you what you wanted. When you let go and didn't mind, he would give it to you. This is a metaphor for meditation. Whenever you ask for deep meditation, you will never get it. As soon as you give up and just content with how far you've got, deep meditation comes to you. So this gratitude and this contentment, this happy contentment, is important ingredient in the path to deep meditation. It's important ingredient in the whole Eightfold Path, which leads to enlightenment. So you should pay a lot of attention to this. Just being grateful for whatever you get. Those of you who are on retreat, please spend a moment of gratitude for the people who bring your breakfast and your lunch. And I don't mean just the monks who put it in your bowl, who bring it to you. I mean the people who work so hard to bring this food, so I can practice without needing to work myself. Have so much gratitude towards this, and it will make the food taste more delicious. With your gratitude, the food tastes wonderful. With ill will, say, why did they put this in my bowl? I told them I didn't like this. Whatever else you think like that, you'll find that food will not taste delicious at all, and you'll get stomachache. Your karma, vipaka, karmic result of being ill will. But not only does it taste delicious, it digests well. And it's because you put happiness into a simple thing. And it's the same when you're walking and sitting, you're putting happiness into just being a monk. You're putting happiness into being able to meditate. You're just grateful for this. And then you go from the heaven of the 33 into the heaven of the Tusita realm, the heaven of the happily contented beings who don't want very much, who don't need very much, who are just happy just with little. And you're just happy just with being able to sit and just watch in the moment, whether you can get to the breath or not, or get nimittas or get jhanas. Oh, that's way down the track. I don't care about that. I'm just happy to be peaceful, happy for a moment just to water the Bodhi tree. And as you do that, you can understand why that creates the happiness in the moment, the happiness with the present moment, the great gratitude for the present moment, which is why the present moment stays and doesn't go anywhere, why the mind stays and doesn't go anywhere. It's happy with just this little old present moment, no matter how it is. I've been asking people to actually anthropomorphize with things like the present moment. Look upon it as a being, a very neglected being, because how often do you actually neglect the present moment to go planning the future or lingering on the past, what someone said or did? So often the present moment is so neglected. So look upon that as a being, the present moment as a being, who is so friendly towards you. It's always coming up to say hello, do you really want to play with me, spend some time with me? And if you spend time with the present moment, it gives you so much happiness, so much peace. So look at your present moment as a little being, and ask yourself, are you spending enough time with this being, the present moment, your friend, your Kalyana Mitta, your noble companion, or are you neglecting it to go off and do something else? To fantasize, to plan, just to remember, to dream, so neglecting your Kalyanamitta, the present moment. If you have gratitude towards it, friendliness towards it, content with it, then it will blossom in front of you. When people first watch the present moment, sometimes if they've got a fault-finding mind, they just cannot stay there. That is why the mind wanders, because you're not happy where you are. How can I be happy where I am? By putting happiness in there. Change one's attitude. When change one's attitude, and there's gratefulness, santuti, katanyuta, loving kindness, then it's so easy to be in the present moment. The present moment becomes your wonderful friend, your Kalyanamitta, your noble acquaintance. We call it a noble acquaintance because it does lead to noble states of mind. It leads to peace, to stillness, to freedom, to liberation, to bliss, to enlightenment. That's why the present moment qualifies as Kalyanamitta. So hang out with that. It's almost an Aryapugala, a noble person. Not quite, but it certainly leads that way. And as you hang out with the present moment with gratitude, you don't find fault with it. Okay, so you've got an ache, so you've got a pain, so it's hot, so it's cold. Don't look in that part of the field of perception. Look in the other part of the field of perception. That part of the field of perception which leads to stillness, which leads to sukha, to the happiness of the mind, which leads to samadhi. It's up to you to train your mind, to train perception, to pick out the noble qualities of katanyuta, santuti, metta. If you don't, then you never get anywhere in your meditation, no matter how perfect the situation is. I can give you $1 billion to make your perfect hut, perfect monastery, perfect teacher, perfect food. But if you haven't got gratitude and contentment, loving kindness, it will never be perfect enough. You'd always find fault with it. Because you find fault with it, you'll never be able to be still. You're always doing something to make it better. Always seeing the faults, seeing the mistakes, fixing this up, fixing that up, never stopping long enough to appreciate. It was only Mara who said it wasn't good enough. The Buddha said it's already good enough. So when we develop that contentment, what we're actually doing is focusing on what we have rather than what's not there. We allow all that's not there to disappear, to let go, to go to emptiness. In that sutta on the Chula Sunyata Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, the Buddha's way of meditating on emptiness, it's always focusing on what's missing out of gratitude. Think of all the stuff which you don't have to do. Think of all of the busyness which is no longer there. And you feel so happy and content. You're free of so much. You don't have a wife or a child. You don't have a house and a business. You don't have to worry about money. Oh, what bliss. Just like that king who became a monk, who was sitting by the root of a tree. Aho sukhang, aho sukhang, he was saying. What do you mean about that? He said, I'm not a king anymore. No worries anymore. Oh, aho sukhang. Please do that. When you finish your work, sit back in your hut. Aho sukhang, oh what bliss, I don't have to sweep now. Oh what bliss, I don't have to cook now. Oh what bliss, I don't have to eat now. Oh what bliss, I finished my shower, I don't need to shower now. Be grateful of all the things which you don't have to do. That brings happiness, contentment. This is a training which one needs to do. That's one trains in this more and more. Present moment is so easy to hang out with because one is always not trying to fix something to make it better for the future. One is actually developing stillness through contentment. One is developing happiness through that stillness. And the present moment just stays. when that contentment grows, then the happiness grows with it. You're so happy in this present moment, you just can't be moved. Hopefully the meditation is getting to the point now when happiness is arising, when the mind just wants to meditate. Not when you have to just do your hours, when you get up in the morning and it's as if this is really what I want to do. You can't sort of, you know, go to the toilet fast enough and get back to get into your meditation again. This is where the happiness is starting to arise in your meditation, in simplicity, in contentment, in gratitude. What a wonderful opportunity this is. And you're really getting into it, enjoying the beauty of meditating. You'll develop the happiness. This is what should be occurring. And you're so happy sometimes in the present moment, there's nothing to say. Silence is a deepening of contentment. The mind isn't restless because it's happy where it is. You don't need to have great bliss to have that stillness if you are happy with little. If you learn contentment with little. But if you really want to get jhanas before you're going to be still, you really, minimum is a nimitta. I'm going to work till I get this nimitta. If that's the degree of your desire and craving, you'll never be still. Not enough contentment, happiness with little. You'll always be thinking, planning, complaining, what am I doing wrong? Maybe it's the place is wrong, the teacher's wrong, the teaching's wrong. Maybe I shouldn't be doing the breath, maybe I should do kasinas. Maybe I shouldn't do kasinas, I should do metta. Maybe I should do walking, maybe I should do... Shut up, please. Just be content with where you are. Develop the happiness with little. Just so happy just to be here. The mind might be all restless all over the place. Okay, I'm content with this. At least I'm sitting down. At least I'm not speaking bad. I'm not doing bad, no matter what the mind is doing. At least two-thirds of the training in bodily, verbal and mental conduct is okay. That's good enough for now. If you're just content like that, the mental stuff ceases. All thought comes from discontent. All movement of the mind comes from seeking happiness somewhere else. You should be able to see that by now with your insight. Every time you want something, the mind moves. Every time you're not happy where you are, you're discontent, you're finding fault, it means you can't stay. You have to move. You've been moving all your life. You've been moving through samsara for lifetimes. Always discontent, looking for this something else. Never being here. Never developing this softness which can be happy with little. Happy with this. This is good enough. Thank you so much just for having this little moment, this little hut, this body, this old breaking down body, but thank you so much. I'm still alive. And I've got this moment I can meditate. Oh, thank you. Then the mind leaps towards the moment. It leaps towards silence. And it stays there. Stays in the silence, effortlessly. And you're learning the way of meditation. You're also learning the path to Nibbana. This is the Eightfold Path. This is the middle way. Contentment, happiness in the moment. You start to understand why we always talk about this Four Noble Truths. There's happiness and the cause of happiness. There's an end of happiness. There's why there's no happiness sometimes and there is no happiness sometimes. You understand these Four Noble Truths. Understand craving is the cause. Discontent, fault-finding, blaming. Oh, that sort of stuff, and you're just following the way of the world, the way of rebirth, more samsara, more problems. You're creating samsara, and you're creating dukkha with it. When you stop all this creating business, with contentment, with gratitude, isn't this wonderful, just to be, hearing a talk, sitting on a cushion, just nothing to do. So happy with this. you become so still, so peaceful. And you build that up and up until bliss starts to come. Real bliss of the mind. The bliss of the mind comes from stillness, not from doing. It doesn't come from seeking. The bliss of the mind comes from the end of seeking, giving up seeking, giving up wanting. You never mend samsara through fixing the faults. You mend samsara by giving up fixing and just looking at see where you are. So this is how we bring the bliss into the mind. Contentment upon contentment upon contentment, just gratitude. So sometimes I sit in my heart and I'm just so grateful for giving interviews, talking to people, whatever, having all this business to do. I'm so grateful that I've got a heart to sit in anyway. I'm so grateful I might have an hour by myself. I just sit and be grateful for this moment. Not asking for anything, not wanting anything, not wanting jhanas, not wanting enlightenment, not wanting anything. Because of that not wanting, that gratitude, that santuti, the hindrances just disappear. The hindrances come from discontent. The hindrance of desire, the hindrance of ill will, just classic cases of the result of discontent, of lack of gratitude. Sloth and torpor, because you just worn yourself out. Worn yourself out trying to chase perfection. And restlessness, more chasing. Doubt, the stupidity of looking somewhere else for happiness. Never here, never in this moment. The next moment, tomorrow, next monastery, next place, next country. When are you ever going to be happy? I guarantee it won't be in the next moment. It won't be tomorrow. One day you'll stop. You'll come home. For this moment, in the silence, is all the happiness you want. This is perfect. If you can only appreciate it and be happy with little. That's why we have all our trainings of being content with little, eating out of our bowl, whatever we get, whatever robes we get, whatever heart we get, whatever moments we get, whatever body we get, we're just so content with this. We build up that content, we train in contentment, we cultivate that, we program that, we condition that, thinking that, chanting that, until it becomes just our habit, when we're just habitually content with little. So easy to meditate, anywhere, anytime. Especially now. We're so happy the bliss comes up so easily. This is one of the problems which people have in their meditation in this monastery. Not enough bliss, not enough happiness. And sometimes they get themselves still out of controlling mostly. They never get the beautiful breath up. And with the beautiful breath they never get the beautiful nimittas coming afterwards. And because of that they never get the jhanas. This is one of the reasons there. There's not enough happiness in the mind, not enough sukha. And this is why, because there's too much discontent, too much asking for more, rather than just being content with little. It seems strange that to get a lot, you have to be content with little. That's the way. With the contentment of little, you're not moving. When you're not moving, you're not doing. When you're not doing, the energy goes into the knowing. Mindfulness becomes strong. It's giving it a chance to grow. It becomes silent. Isn't it wonderful, the moments you've been silent in your meditation? When it's silent, you just can't give orders anymore. You can't complain. In silence, all measuring stops. And with all measuring,